It's the TEH Podcast, episode number 275, with Leo Notenboom of AskLeo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of MacMost.com. This week, what to do with old Macs and a day in the life of a tech creator.
Hey, Gary.
Hey, Leo. How's it going?
It is going. I have a question for you.
Yeah.
As we do, we over the years cycle through our machines. I got myself a new desktop machine earlier this year, which pushed the previous desktop machine down into my basement. I'm using it as a faux NAS almost. But that in turn pushed an older previous desktop machine off to the side, and I'm not really sure what to do with it. For many years, I used what is referred to as a late 2013 Mac Pro. It's for those that remember those, this is the paint can era, right? Yeah. It was the nice tubular design. I really liked the design of the thing.
I loved it. I had one. I had the same one. And
yeah, it, it was a machine that I was actually proud to have on my desk instead of next to my desk, right? I mean, it was kind of cool. Anyway, it's been running for, gosh, I guess that makes it 13 years now. And it's been running continuously, you know, obviously with a few moments of downtime, but it's pretty much been running for 13 years continuously, doing various things. I think I've reinstalled the OS on it once. It's, you know, it's a fine machine, you know, 12 cores, 64 gigabytes of RAM. It, you know, but given the machines that I have, which are more powerful, and that I've got, you know, another machine that's got like, I think 45 terabytes of disk space on it that I use as my phone NAS now. I'm just sort of curious. I'm left with this machine. It's essentially a glorified MP3 player. I have remote desktop on it so that I can access it from my machines elsewhere. But it's, and it's headphone output or line output, one or the other, is plugged into our home stereo system. Right. So that if I want to hear music, you know, here in my office or in the kitchen or in the bedroom or whatever, that's the machine that I go to. And it's got, you know, things like YouTube Music and VLC and a few other random music playing apps installed. It seems like overkill for an MP3 player.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious, you know, what else should I think about doing with this machine?
You know, I get asked this question a lot.
Really?
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Well, just somebody's got an older Mac. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if it's past its point where it's worth anything as a trade-in or to resell.
Right.
You know, when that falls. And this is, you're talking about 13. It's a powerful Mac, but it's 13 years old. It's not capable of running the latest operating system. And it's not capable of doing many of the AI things because it's using an Intel processor. So it's the,
Right.
So lots of people ask me this, and over the years, even, you know, go back to 10 years ago and people were asking about 10, 15 year old machines then. There's no really good answer. It's kind of like, you know, you can do lots with it, but do you need it? Like, for instance, you're using it for music playing. Most of my music playing is just done on my iPhone. It's like, you know, my AirPods, or I could just, you know, cast it to something. As for like playing over speakers, I've got two HomePods. I could use an old Mac to cast music to them, but they're capable of playing the music just fine on their own. They don't need a computer, you know? So it's like that kind of thing. It's like, you feel like you should be able to do something with this. You could boot it up and you could look at it. And it's like really cool. It's like, oh, the possibilities that are there, but it doesn't really have a place because most of the things you would do with it, you could easily do on your current hardware. Even your current hardware, just doing it on the side, you know, whatever your current latest Windows machine for you would be, could easily just play the music while you're working, you know, on other things. You don't need a whole separate machine. So it's a tough question to answer. And I suppose that computers aren't the only things that have that, right? You've got, you know, any other number of gadgets or cars or phones or, you know, all sorts of stuff. I'm in the situation right now with a car because of the way we ended up with cars that we have an extra car now, which I'm going to sell because it, but it sits there and it's like, what could I do with this? Like I could take it on, I could take this and drive this up to the mountains to go on hikes. But we have another car. Like I could do that with the other car. Like we don't need two separate cars for that. Like I could, oh, this could be handy if I wanted to go backpacking, you know, for several nights. Well, how many times a year did I do that? A couple, to be sure, but it's worth having an entire car. The same thing with like you listen to music lots of times. Is it worth having an entire 2013 Mac Pro sitting there, you know, just so you could do that with it?
All 12 cores just sort of
Right.
idly idling, right?
And that was my favorite Mac Pro. I had the Mac Pros, several Mac Pros, and Power Macs that, you know, predated the Power Mac Towers that predated it, that looked kind of the same. And I love those, but then this small, it didn't really have the expandability of the Mac Pros that had all the slots, which was fine for me because I never added anything to them anyway. You know, so I had this thing from 2013 to 2019, and I replaced it with the new Mac Pro that came out, which I only had for 2 years because then they came out with the Mac Studio that I'm currently using, which is very much the successor to what you have now. It's a small desktop powerhouse as opposed to some tower that's just sitting on your desk and have a bunch of slots that if you don't need them, you probably didn't need the machine. But yeah, there's no good answer. Lots of people love to do hobby stuff with it, but it's like, are you doing the hobby stuff because you want to do the hobby and you happen to have a Mac, or are you trying to force yourself to do a hobby, you know, because you've got this piece of equipment that you think you should use? It's like having a, you know, so some uncle gives you an old sailboat that, you know, is too old to use now. And it's like, well, I've got this boat on Lake whatever, you know, and it's falling apart. What do I do with it? You know, it's like, well,
I feel
maybe
obligated to do
you
something,
feel
yeah.
obligated to do something with it. Yeah, there's no good answer. I've never come up with a really good answer myself. I don't keep the old Macs around.
What do you do with them?
I for ones that are worth something, there's a resale, a Mac resale, like reseller local to me that I found years ago that'll buy them. A couple times I've sold really like the case of that when I said I got a Mac Pro in 2019 and 2021 or 22, I booted to a Mac Studio. That Mac Pro was still pretty new and I actually got a decent amount of money for it. Other times I've brought things to him that he's like, well, I'm not gonna be able to give you much for this. And it's like, that's fine. Like I'm basically recycling here, but you're giving me $100 or $200 for it. You know, and then you get something that you're going to probably, you know, spruce up. You're going to clean it. You're going to reinstall the system. And then maybe a student's going to come along and pay you $300 for an old Mac. It's that's all I want out of that. So I've done that. And yeah, there's a couple old ones I've kept around just because I like the appearance, the design. I've still got my iMac G4, which is the one that's like the sphere with the arm coming out of it. Looks like a Pixar lamp.
Oh, yeah, I remember
I'm
that
looking at it right now in my
one.
office because it's like a pretty design. It was like worth something just to have as a cool little piece. And it actually works. Like I haven't booted it up in a while, but it'll work. I've got a an old Mac 12-inch MacBook Pro because I love that design. And it wasn't worth anything, but I want to keep it around because it's just a cool looking little computer. So a couple times I do that. You know, if
It's
you have storage enough for a few choice pieces, you just can't keep them all.
it's funny because I run my machines into the ground,
Yeah.
right? I mean the machines that I take out of service, I've usually taken out of service either because obviously not because they've degraded in performance, but the world has begun, you know, assumed greater and greater and greater performance needs. So to run anything useful or anything current, the old machine just doesn't cut it anymore. Or, you know, the machine dies, something happens in the machine, and it's just old enough that it's not worth repairing, and it literally goes to the local electronics
Right.
recycle.
Yeah.
This Mac Pro is kind of standing out because it just keeps on running. And it's also, I love using it as an example of the lifespan of SSDs because these are now
Oh, good point.
13-year-old SSDs that continue to run without issue. Granted, I'm not using them heavily, but there's some amount of activity on them just because the system is running, and they just keep going as well. So interesting. Yeah, the other machines, like I said, it's the desktop trickle down, and my oldest desktop, the one that predated the MacBook Pro. It was an old x86 quad core, and it was a great machine in its day. But by the time I was done with it, it was not worth anything. So I literally ended up just parting it out and recycling the electronics.
I think for the cylinder one that you've got, I mean, that would fit. If it wasn't still worth something, I think I don't know how much for it, $1,000 or something. I think it was $800 for it when I sold that one. If it wasn't worth that much, if it was worth less, if it was worth $200 or $300, I just would have kept it, and it would probably be sitting next to my iMac G4 now.
Put
It's
it on
just
a
a,
shelf.
yeah,
Just
because it's cool looking. It doesn't take up much space. Good, just interesting design. I really thought it was a good design. And as I do with the Mac Studio I have now, it's a good design. I mean, it's incredible the size of this thing. It's a fat Mac Mini, but mine's got an M1 Ultra in it. And
Right.
strangely enough, today, as we're recording this, Apple just released a new Mac Studio that has an M5 Ultra
Right.
in it.
Yeah, I've heard
So
that
tempting.
the rumors on that one are pretty impressive, especially on the AI side, from what I've seen.
Oh yeah, and the only thing is the price. You know, when they came out with the M, I think this was about $3,000 when I got the M1 Ultra Mac Studio. If you want to go with the Ultra chip, it's going to run you 6,000 or more.
Right.
So, you know, this it's a hard one to, you know, hard one to go for. They've discontinued the Mac Pro again. They've done it before, but I think for good now. I think now, finally, at least in the Mac world, people have gotten over the idea that they need to have card slots. It's Thunderbolt. You got Thunderbolt 5.
Right.
Attach what you want to it. You don't need to have this big hollow space that like 80% of the people that buy the machine are never going to put anything in. And the Mac Studio is their big, you know, powerhouse
It's
Mac.
interesting because my current machine, the new machine that I got earlier this year, it is the classic big tower box that sits next to my desk. The biggest reason I got it is I've got a high-end NVIDIA graphics card in it because of things like AI, running AI locally, or running like my video editing software. DaVinci Resolve uses that quite nicely. And there are a couple of other tools that end up using the graphics card if it's present. There's a lot of hollow space in there. But it's also a situation where over the years, I have definitely ended up adding cards to the machines that I've used in the past. And, especially when migrating from machine to machine, depending on what those cards are, they are still usable. I haven't installed any of them in there, but I've got another card that will add, like, I think, 8 USB 3 ports to it if I want to. Or I've got one that will actually add HDMI inputs as opposed to outputs, right? Which is the common scenario. So those are things that I still have open to me by having a machine that I can add cards to. But you're right, I never once felt the need to add something to the Mac Pro. Different
So,
question for you.
yes.
What do you do all day?
So, well, we talked about this before. We talked about the idea of maybe breaking away from our normal, you know, covering the news kind of thing and talking about what we do as well, internet entrepreneurs, which is an antiquated term at
That's the
this
fancy
point,
term, yeah.
fancy antiquated term, like where it's back in 1999. But like, what do we do all day? Because we do similar kinds of things, producing content for users and stuff. So yeah, I'll start. My goal every day, more or less, is to produce one of my videos, right? I've got a tutorial video. I've got three that I'm currently doing per week for YouTube and two for Patreon every week. So that's five. That fills out the week nicely. I always try to front load the week. So if I could get more done earlier, that gives me more time to work on other projects later in the week. So basically, every morning I start off with the flood of YouTube comments and emails and comments at my site and things like that. That's the first thing that I get hit with. Usually, like over coffee, breakfast. I try to not be in my office for that. Sit with one of my laptops and outside. Sometimes I go to a coffee shop, try to get away from the office and all that, just to focus on getting through all of that. Once I'm through all of that, then I look at my ideas list for videos, video ideas. And, because every time one hits me, whether it's from a comment somebody asked, something I'm reading, something randomly comes up, I just put it in a list, a to-do list that's really an ideas list. So I'll go through that. And usually I've already prioritized them, thinking which ones I need to do soon. So I'll look at it, I'll pick which one I want to do. And sometimes I've already put an outline with it. When I come up with the idea, I'll just write some notes. Oh, sure to include this, and this and this. But at this point now, over coffee, or finishing my last sips of coffee, I'll try to flesh out the outline a little bit, just a bullet list of all the things I want to cover in the video. And when I'm kind of satisfied with okay, I've got enough, I need to start working on this, it kind of works perfectly, because at that point I'm ready to work on it. I'm like, oh, okay, now I got to film it. I'm starting to think of the things to say and all that. So then I'll move into my office and I will start recording the video. Usually means switching to a demo account and then turning my camera on, doing all that stuff. And then I record the video. Sometimes I'll run it through first before recording. So especially if I'm unsure of some of the steps, I'll be like, okay, let me just go through each of the things I want to show, like actually build the thing I'm going to build, or alter the thing I'm going to alter, whatever it is. And then I'll roll everything back, all the settings or whatever, back to how it was. And then I'll record me doing it. Doing, repeating myself when necessary, when I flub, a sentence and whatever, or something doesn't go right on the screen. And I end up with a recording that's somewhere between 20 and 30 minutes long, usually. Then I'm recording in ScreenFlow, and I save that out and I switch back to my main account. And then I start editing. So going through, finding the best takes of every little piece, editing it down to the video that I eventually post. Sometimes I need to re-record a bit. There's a thing I want to add, or just something where I didn't say the right thing. For instance, a video I did just yesterday, I was talking about uninstalling, and twice I said install instead of uninstall for some reason. So I re-recorded those bits, which means putting my cap back on, turning the lights back on, switching back to the demo cam, and just re-recording these little bits. And so eventually I end up finishing it. And then there's the whole process. Once I'm done, then there's it's about 20 minutes of stuff to get it published. Stuff that you would think, well, I have automated some of it, but you would think I would like to automate it more, except that I kind of like doing it. I don't know if it's doing a lot of work in a short period of time with little room for error, because if things aren't working, you just have to do it again. So I upload to YouTube and to my CDN, which hosts it for my website. I have to do a summary of it, which is AI generated. I do a transcript, which is AI generated for use in one place. And then I have another transcript that's human generated for use in another place. And then I have to put all the things in place for both YouTube and the CDN. And I shoot it over to archive.org, right away. Instead of archiving it a month from now, I just archive it right away at archive.org.
Don't they come along and pick it up eventually?
You're talking about the Wayback Machine, like that? No, that would pick up the page, but it won't grab the CDN hosted streaming video. So I actually host. So I actually upload the video file as well as the summary, the transcript, and the thumbnail to archive.org. The idea being that one day I
Of course.
will be done.
Yes.
I'll retire or whatever. And at that point, I probably would feel like I need to have all my stuff, archived somewhere. So you could look at the MacMost archive. Well, that's being done as I'm going.
Interesting. I need to look into that because I have seen archive. I have heck. I have had a couple of pages go missing from my site through various technology transitions, but I've been able to reconstruct them with that safety net because archive.org came along at some point and slurped up the text.
Yeah, and that would work for the web page, definitely. But
Right.
I don't have
But
to
I didn't
really,
realize I need to
yeah,
do
the
that, start
video.
doing that for the videos.
Yeah. So I do all that. And then, so now it's all done and I schedule it because I'm always scheduling it like it's about 2 weeks out, sometimes a little more if I know I'm going to be away from the office for a bit. But usually I try to be about 2 weeks out. And I'll schedule the video to run. Which is a bunch of steps because I have to schedule the WordPress post at my site. I got to schedule the YouTube video. Everything's got to be in sync. And there's a whole bunch of extra special fields to fill in WordPress for all the bits and pieces. But once I'm done all of that everything is automatic after it. Like my newsletter will pick it up normally. Like when I go to produce the newsletter, I just say, give me the videos from the week and I have it all. The RSS feeds are automatic. There's a daily notification email. Even posting to Blue Sky and Mastodon are automatic from all of that. So that's great because I can feel like I could kind of move on afterwards. I don't have, there's not like, okay, I'm 99% done and I'll be 100% done the day the video plays. No, I'm 100% done now. There's no input from me needed for this video to actually appear in 2 weeks. And then, so that takes me through, depending on how smoothly things go, either I have a late lunch or I've already had lunch as a break somewhere here and now I've finished it after lunch. Depending on how I feel and what else I've got scheduled, I will try to work on a second video. Sometimes, as a change of pace, I'll do a Patreon video, which they have a different kind of feeling to them and flavor to them and topics and stuff. And sometimes I will try to do another MacMost video for YouTube. And it's okay if I don't finish it that day. Sometimes I will just finish it the next morning, but usually I will. If I start one, I will, even if it takes me like to the other side of dinner to finish it. Other times I'll just say, ah, I think I've done enough. I'm gonna either work on some other project, do some maintenance work, other things. Maybe it's I'm gonna take the afternoon off or part of the afternoon off, that kind of deal. I try to schedule something. I have things scheduled Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday for, I guess, combating the fact that I'm a solopreneur working by myself, which I think that's a problem because I'm not in the social environment all day. I could be completely by myself all morning. And so I've got a Zoom meeting Monday night. That is just people from all over the world talking about a specific topic. I talk with family on Tuesday nights. And on Wednesday nights, I have a real, like, I go out into the world and have a regular, like, pub thing where I hang out at a pub with a regular rotating group of people every Wednesday. So that really helps, I think, kind of round things out a little bit. Otherwise, there are days if one of those gets canceled, or maybe on Thursday or something like that. Boy, I could really I'll walk. Oh, I forgot to add, I walk the dog. So before I eat breakfast, I got to walk the dog, and then after dinner, I walk the dog. If I go to walk the dog and I realize, for the second time, and I realize I haven't done anything else except sit at my desk between those 2 times. Then that's a problem. That's like a failure of my day. Like, oh, I should have really tried to put something else in there. Like, I should have gotten out. I should have gone to do something or gone out to eat for lunch or done something else. I tried to avoid that kind of book it, dog walks with nothing in the middle at all, kind of except work. Yeah.
Interesting. It's funny because as I sit here listening to you describe your day, the similarities
Yeah.
are amazing.
Huh? Oh.
It's really funny. So yeah, I'm in that same situation.
Yeah.
I'm an inter solopreneur, which is a difficult word for me
Solopreneur, yeah.
to conceptualize or whatever. But nonetheless, I'm an internet entrepreneur, and I spend my day sitting exactly where I'm sitting right now, staring at the computer screen I'm staring at right now,
Yeah.
all day long. Kind of. It's so my days start, every day starts with the dogs. There's just no way around that, right? I mean, they get priority because if you don't give them priority, there's a price to be paid, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Dogs, then coffee, then breakfast. Actually, dogs, their breakfast, then coffee, then my breakfast. When it comes to the work, the computers and so forth, I am an inbox zero kind of guy. And on top of that, I have like three or four major email accounts that I deal with every day. Fortunately, they settle into three interfaces. I've got two Proton Mail accounts and then one Fast Mail that kind of gets a bunch of email from a different a number of different domains. So it's definitely, personal work. And then there's this the third account that I'm talking about is one that I use for all of my newsletters because I get a lot of newsletters, usually focused on not necessarily Ask Leo, but some of my other endeavors. I get a lot of newsletters that are related to things like seven takeaways or not all news is bad. So that's usually job one when I'm drinking my coffee in the morning is going through the email that's collected overnight. And when I do get to the Ask Leo stuff, what ends up happening there is I will go through the email first. The questions that I get via email, I end up forwarding to my ticketing system. We actually have a ticketing system. Unlike you, I have multiple people dealing with various pieces of the machine, and one of those is the incoming stream of questions. Questions can come in. Questions and comments can come in via either direct email to me, direct email to a support address, or like there's two or three different forms on the website depending on what level of support you've committed to, right? There's the generic ask form, but then there's also an ask form for patrons. And ask form for people that have purchased a product of mine and so forth. Anyway, those questions all get thrown into a ticketing system. It's called FreeScout, but it literally is the same kind of customer support ticketing system that you've probably seen elsewhere. It operates a lot like Zendesk, which I think is something people have probably heard a lot about in the past. So those end up being my priorities. Comments first. Comments on the website first, because I want to make sure that the website always represents the best of me in the sense that if there's questions that go unanswered for a long time, or if there's something I want to answer, I want it to be answered there first because it's public. Then I move on to the YouTube comments, which unlike you, I basically every morning I declare bankruptcy because there's just too many. Over, in 24 hours, too many comments. So what I typically will end up doing is I will scroll back about 12 hours and then just go through the comments that have arrived in the most recent 12 hours that prior to whenever I happen to be looking at. That does mean that a lot of comments go on unseen, actually, a lot of comments go unanswered. Fortunately, in recent months, the level of comment spam on YouTube has actually gone down fairly dramatically. It used to be a huge problem for account recovery scams, basically, is my bugaboo there. But I've not, either YouTube has gotten a lot better at filtering them automatically, or the account recovery scam people have gone somewhere else. I don't know. And so that's number two on the list. And then finally, I'll start working through the questions in the ticketing system to see what needs my attention. And in the case of Ask Leo comments and the ticketing system, they've already been pre-screened. I have one of my assistants, Mark, who coincidentally happens to live in Germany, which means overnight, while some of these things are coming in, he's actually been filtering out through a number of the quote unquote repetitive or inappropriate comments. I'm reluctant to use the word stupid comments because that has a level of I don't know, inference that I really don't want to apply. The comments and the questions that I get really aren't stupid very often. They are ignorant. They just don't know, or they don't know what to ask or how to ask it. But nonetheless, there's some stuff that he deals with and that gets filtered out. Anyway, that leaves me usually mid-morning. I'm out of that cycle. And that's when I start looking at what I'm going to do with content on the site. Unlike you, your video first, actually your video only, I think. I am article first and video second, which means that I actually write an article, and then once the article is written, I will record a video discussing the same topic. Typically, it runs very close to the flow of the article because, I mean, I've got a flow. I mean, the article is written with the idea that there'll be a video following it, but usually the article has a good structure, a good flow, especially for step-by-step stuff. It's the step-by-step, regardless of which format you're presenting it in. So Mondays and Tuesdays mostly, I end up focusing on getting the five articles that I'm going to write or update that week taken care of. And I have to say write or update because, again, the approach that I take is ever so slightly different than yours. We've talked about this before. You are more about, here are these wonderful features in Mac OS. Here's how to use them. Here's how to exploit them. Whereas I come at it from people's problems. You're having this problem with Windows. Here's how you solve it. And what I find over the years, especially after having done this now for 23 years, is that I've answered so many of these questions already that it become, well, sometimes it's embarrassing. I have gone through the process multiple times of writing this wonderful new article on a specific topic, and then I will go and search my site so that I can come up with some good related articles, and I will find that not only is it related, no, I wrote this exact same article 3 years ago, and I forgot about it. What happens next depends on how I'm feeling. Sometimes I will go ahead and publish the new article because it's another slightly different approach, different words. Maybe it'll appeal to people that the other one didn't appeal to. Maybe the SEO gods will pick up this one instead of that one, whatever. But yes, I have in fact completely trashed articles that I've written just because, no, it's the same article. But what I let what that ex The reason I mention all that is because a number of my articles these days are updates rather than new articles written from scratch, which I do try to do a couple of times a week at least. But a number of them are updates to existing articles. Now, in my world, that means doing things like updating Windows 7 or Windows 10 references to Windows 11, updating the screenshots, making sure that it's accurate with respect to current technology. But ultimately, it's the same article. And then I also have my five tips of the day that I try to make sure get done as well. All of that I try to have happen on Monday and Tuesday. This week, for example, I have four of my five articles already in the can, and the five tips already in the can, meaning that they're done and they've been handed off to my editor, who does an editing pass on them. But the videos have not yet been recorded. Let's see, that's that. So I've got one more article that I need to deal with this week specifically, and it needs to be one from scratch. So I'll be like you, I've got a list of article ideas. I've also got a list of sources that I look at for article ideas. So one of them is called MacMost. We talked about this before, I think last week. I ended up just being blatant and stealing one of your ideas almost verbatim. Wednesdays are essentially a personal day. I end up dealing with family on Wednesdays, a road trip up to Bellingham and back. Thursday, then I come back and I end up picking up the pieces of whatever's left for Ask Leo. Fridays, it's funny. Friday morning, I'm heading out to a pub to meet with real people for real conversation. It because of the way the timing works, it ends up being over lunch, which is why I'm there at 11 rather than later in the day. And then again, Friday afternoon, I end up sliding into whatever else needs to be done. Thursdays and Saturdays, usually one or the other, are my video recording days. So I don't try to do one video a day. I end up trying to write all my articles, and then I have the opportunity to sit down, usually for a couple of hours, and I will record five videos, one pretty much right after the other. The difference is that then I take these videos and I hand them off to Connie, who actually does the editing, the production, the templating in YouTube, the uploads, the scheduling, all of that. In my case, especially for articles that are being updated, it needs to be handled kind of carefully because the article remains live on my website, even though it's been updated. It's just that on the day of quote unquote republication, we change the publication date so it moves to the head of the queue and it shows up as a new article in WordPress. But that also means then that the related video needs to have been released at the same time. Again, something that Connie takes care of. In my case, all of the YouTube video, actually all of the videos end up getting embedded in the article that they go along with. So people have the choice right away of either reading the article or scrolling down and seeing the video. Which video you see, it's uploaded twice. One of them is on YouTube. For people that are not patrons, they just see YouTube videos on Ask Leo. But if you are a paying patron, then instead you see a video that is self-hosted, I think on the same CDN that you use, and doesn't have any of the YouTube fluff, including ads and that kind of stuff. My commitment for people that are patrons is that they have an ad-free experience. And I realized at one point that embedding a YouTube video is not necessarily an ad-free experience. So I started doing this where we pick or choose which one to show them, depending on whether they're logged into their account or not. So yeah, that's typically it's on Saturday. This week it's going to have to be on Thursday. But I'll just sit down, same as you. One of the things I've optimized my workspace for is to make it really easy to record videos. So for me to record a video, all I really need to do is to turn on a couple of lights, which I don't have turned on right now because I don't need it. Fire up OBS, which is what I use to record, and hit record. Right? I mean, it's literally that simple. If I've got, if I'm doing a screen walkthrough, if I'm doing actually demoing something, I will bring up a virtual machine that I then have in a second window so that at editing time, what Connie is faced with is actually two screens. One is just my talking head, and then the other is a full 1920 by 1080 screen capture. And then she makes sure that they get interleaved and my head gets overlaid and all that kind of stuff appropriately as part of the editing process, which gives us a lot of flexibility in terms of how we put these things together. This week on Friday, I'm actually going to be heading out of town. I'm doing volunteer work for the Multiple Sclerosis Society. They have a bike ride up about 50 miles north of here. So for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, I will be up there driving around following the cyclists. But that's a once a year thing. But the flexibility in my schedule, the way that I put things together, lets me do that. Right, I can front load the work and not have to worry about recording videos on Saturday or doing anything else. The other piece that's missing from all of this, actually the other two pieces that's missing from all of this, are my non-Ask Leo pieces of work. Not all news is bad is something that I started years ago for myself to remind myself that indeed not all news is bad, even though it sometimes seems that way. And I kind of missed a step in my mornings. It's dogs, feeding the dogs, getting my coffee, having my breakfast, checking email. Then, pretty much religiously, I go grab a good news item from the various sources that I have that I'm scanning and capture it for Not All News Is Bad. I tend to go 3 days ahead for Not All News Is Bad so that if I happen to miss a day or two, it's everything keeps publishing. But it is, and it's like 5 or 10 minutes. It's a very low impact thing, but I try to make sure that that happens every day. The other one is Seven Takeaways, which is definitely more time consuming because it actually requires that I read stuff, which indeed was the intent of starting Seven Takeaways again a few years to read some higher quality stuff rather than spending my time either in video games or doom scrolling. The intent of, from its name is that, I should read something every day. And then come up with an entry for seven takeaways that day and add it. In practice, it hasn't turned out that way. In practice, it ends up being more like, okay, Wednesday, well, I better start gathering some seven takeaways stuff. Thursday, oh boy, I better start getting some seven takeaways stuff. So I end up doing most of the seven takeaways work, in the 2, 3, or if I'm being really good, the 4 days leading up to the Sunday publication date. And then Saturdays, hopefully videos normally. Sunday is an open day for me where I'm doing things around the house. Like you, I'm also, throughout all of this, keeping an eye on my servers, maintaining my backups and just sort of making sure that the world is still working the way we expect it to. And I'm also playing with things. I mean, let's face it, that's one of the reasons I'm in this job. I want to be able to continue to play with technology. Ask Leo et al. Gives me the excuse to do that, and in some ways, actually even get paid for it. So that's kind of like a week in the life of Leo. I don't think I've missed anything, but there's a lot going on. I'm juggling a lot of balls.
No, they are remarkably similar, our weeks. I do love the fact that we get to play around with technology and call it work. Like I don't have to feel guilty if I'm like just going through some camera settings or trying something or have an idea and I want to experiment or whatever. I could be like, yeah. And you know what? Most of the time that stuff does turn into videos. Like I will play around with something and I'll be like, I think I found something here that would be of interest to other people and I'll make a video from it. So it's not like, oh, I'm using it as an excuse. I know you're the same way. I'm not using it as an excuse and never being productive with it. It's like usually it is productive. So,
It's funny. So, which actually transitions really nice to the next thing I've got on the list here. Of course, one of the things we've both been playing with a lot over the past year is AI. And and indeed, a number of articles on Ask Leo have resulted from that playing and even just thinking about AI, right? I mean, there's using it and then there's thinking about it because there's a lot of deep issues around it, everything from, its impact, the concerns about plagiarism to what it's going to turn into, to just how do you make this work and how do you make it work in a way that adds value to your workflow. I discovered one this week that I kind of sort of already knew about, but it just came to mind and I said, I should try that. The issue is this. You probably run into this from time to time. You'll want to screen capture something that is on your screen for use in a video or an article. But the thing on the screen is actually very small. It's appropriate for its use, but as part of, say, an article, you want to highlight it, or as part of, say, a video, you want to highlight it. So if you zoom in on it, or in the case of an image, if you just quote unquote make it bigger, by increasing it by, say, 300%, which is what I happen to need, it ends up looking like an image that's been upscaled. There are good technologies. There are better technologies. I've done this with a couple of different tools. I even had a couple of AI tools that would upscale photographs, but I kept finding them less than impressive. The results, Technically, yeah, they were upscaled, but the level of artifacts, the level of clearly artificial stuff that was left in the upscaled images was pretty bad. So I said, you know, I've got this image. I'm trying to think. I think it was of a, oh, let me see. I've still got it probably in my history here. Thought I had it here somewhere. Well, maybe not. I forget what it was. It was some kind of an indicator on a dialogue, on a web page, or on a tool that I was using. I said, you know what? I would like this to be three times as big.
Yeah.
And I ran it through a couple of tools, including Photoshop, which I assumed would be the best. And I said, you know, I'm just going to hand this off to Gemini and let Gemini upscale it. So I uploaded the image to Gemini. I said, please make this 300% bigger. And not only did it, the image was, for lack of a better term, perfect. Crystal clear. Exactly what I was hoping it would be, and much better than the upscaled, the algorithmic upscale that both Photoshop and a couple of other tools were doing. And I think part of that is because I'm conjecturing here, but my sense is that what AI is doing is it's not looking at the image as a collection of pixels over which you need to run an algorithm. It's looking at the image and saying, what's in the image? What's the best way to make this bigger and have it look good? Like I said, in my case, it was, you know, the classic case of like an oval, right? If you upscale an oval in multiple tools, you end up with, and this is a line art oval, but even line art oval, if you upscale it, you're going to end up with fading around the edges, pixelization potentially around the edges. Artifacts around the edges. What I got from Gemini was a line, an oval. There was a clear, it's part of the oval and it's not. And it was, like I said, perfect. I will definitely try to look up that image and see if I can't include it in our show notes. Oh, there it is. It was a one-time password from my password manager. So 1Password can do Google compatible two-factor authentication. And I'm talking about that in an article. And I wanted to include a screen capture of it displaying a one-time password. And it was tiny. So I made it bigger. And it looks great. Like I said, I'll include both the original and the a link to the higher resolution version that was upscaled because I'm actually pretty pleased with it. But that's the kind of stuff that, you know, if you're playing with AI, you're not necessarily, I want to say, using it for a certain workflow and only that workflow. Because I know we both use it for our workflows. That's part of the deal. But if you're also at the same time playing with it and just seeing what it can do, that's when you end up thinking about these, I wonder if situations. And every once in a while, you come up with a situation that just solves the problem so perfectly that it ends up not only helping you display what you want to display better, but it ends up becoming interesting information that you end up talking about in a podcast.
I actually had something very similar happen to me yesterday. In a minute, we're going to talk about our self-promotion stuff. And the video I'm going to talk about, I was trying to come up with a YouTube thumbnail for it. It's not a MacMost video, it's a different thing. And I've always had trouble coming up with, you know, I just don't have much time to think of thumbnails and all that. So I came up with what I thought was a better thumbnail than what I've been doing in the past. I actually just sent it to you in the chat. So you could see, that's what I came up with. I thought it was okay. So it's basically just it shows a picture of the skyline of Denver, and it shows downtown Denver walking tour. And then I put like kind of a map over the sky in the back and all. And I thought, eh, it's not bad. I decided, well, before I publish this, let me see if ChatGPT has any suggestions. Here's the funny thing. I typed into ChatGPT, here's my YouTube thumbnail for my walking tour video. And I probably should have said something like, can you make suggestions or can you what? For some reason, I don't know why I typed, Can you do better? Question mark.
Sure.
And I pressed return without attaching the image.
Oh.
ChatGPT came back with yes, which made like laugh out loud for real. I was like, it was like, okay, all right, thanks a lot, ChatGPT. I know my thumbnails sometimes are crap, but thanks. And then it said, please upload the thumbnail so I could take a look. And I was like, all right. So I uploaded the thumbnail. And at this point, I'm feeling indignant. I'm like, let's see. I'm sure this is going to be total crap. And you're looking at that image now. And ChatGPT took 30 seconds and then gave me this.
Nice.
And I was like, and my jaw dropped. And I was like, oh boy. Okay, it just totally showed me up. So the description, my video, mine was this skyline. There's a map kind of superimposed over the blue of the sky. There's a little logo and black text that says Downtown Denver Walking Tour. It came back with Downtown Denver Walking Tour. Downtown is big, white, cool-looking letters. Denver, even bigger, yellow letters, shadow under it. A little splash of paint says Walking Tour. Like it's red paint with white text on it, walking tour there. It's got like in an oval, it shows the map on the corner. It shows the Denver skyline, really bright, vivid colors. At the
And to
bottom, it
say
shows some icons.
it took your photo though and like
Yes.
increased the vibrancy
Well,
dramatically.
no, it didn't do that. So I saw this and I said, well, crap, I can't obviously use my thumbnail now that I've been enlightened to show what a thumbnail can be, but I couldn't use this one. Why? Because that Denver skyline is not my photo. It's close to it, but it's actually AI slop. Like if I look at it, some of the buildings are a little different. There's
Oh.
some architectural changes. It's junk.
Oh.
It's also got the problem where it's showing the mountains on the east side of Denver, which they're famously on the west side of Denver, the whole point of the city being here. And some of the information was not right. Even the map was kind of, it was just made up map with
Okay.
some of the points. So I was like, well, I need to recreate this. So what I did is the actual thumbnail on the video is me taking this idea and I recreated it. So it's my real photo of Denver. It's my real map, which I put in an oval and warped. It's real text. And I redid it close to what. And also, I realized that the text at the bottom was too small for a YouTube thumbnail too. So it wasn't perfect, but I redid it. So anyway, it's just funny that the image, just asking ChatGPT, I thought it was funny that it said yes, I can make a better thumbnail than you without seeing my thumbnail, and then I was also like totally schooled on like, oh yeah, all right, I can see why it was so confident it could make a better thumbnail than me.
Because it could,
It
yeah.
could. It could. It did by not even close. Not even close.
That is actually very cool. I'll throw I discovered the final. Oh, I can't do that. Okay, fine, never mind.
Well, yeah, I'll see it.
I'll throw my stuff in the notes. But yeah, it's funny because in a way, you're using that AI the same way I tend to use a lot of what I ask for from AI. I'm not necessarily looking for a final result.
Yeah.
I'm looking for ideas and corrections and opportunities. And in this case, you're taking that second thumbnail and then taking its ideas to make your own. It's classic. That's a great use of the technology.
Yeah.
So very cool.
Yep. Cool. So, yeah.
Let's see what else is cool.
Speaking of cool,
Yeah. So I don't know if this is the one you recommended to me or if I fell
no,
into it somewhere else.
but I have heard of this book, so I'm
Okay.
really curious.
Yep.
Yes.
The Infinite Sadness of Small Appliances by Glenn Dixon. I forget. I must have run across it in one of my seven takeaways readings somewhere. The protagonist is a sentient Roomba, and it interacts with a number of other sentient and semi-sentient appliances. I was expecting this to be more of a, I don't know, comedy maybe. I mean, sentient Roomba. I mean, you're just setting it up for that kind of stuff. And in fact, there are some very, nicely done humorous parts, but in reality, it's a very, very touching, dystopian future kind of a scenario that actually touches on what happens when technology ends up taking too much control of, I'll just say, the world and leave it at that. There are definitely some scenarios in this, like I said, that are very, very touching and make you potentially even feel some feelings. So, highly recommended, actually. The Infinite Sadness of Small Appliances. It's not a long book. It's like a couple days worth of reading. And I think you in particular will definitely enjoy it.
Yeah, it sounds like it. I added it to my wish list. For me, I don't think we've mentioned the TV show yet.
Right.
Stewart Fails to Save the Universe. Did you watch Big Bang Theory when that was
Oh,
on?
yes.
Yeah.
Oh,
So
yeah.
this is related to that. It takes
Ha
Stewart, the comic book store owner, out as the main character, but it includes three other characters that were throughout the series, but just as side characters,
Secondary characters, yep.
secondary characters, brings them in and creates a totally fantasy sci-fi premise, whereas Big Bang Theory was a reality-based,
Right.
sitcom. This is, yeah, they get thrown into alternate realities, very much like the old TV show Sliders. It's like almost like a comedy version of Sliders, if you remember that from the and the interesting thing is, so it's on HBO. It's probably, I think it's maybe going to be 8 or 10 episodes, for this first season, one a week, and just half hour, and it's all played for laughs. Definitely, the universes they find themselves in are ridiculous, and ridiculous things happen to them. But the interesting thing is that it's done by what Chuck Lorre, who made Big Bang Theory and tons of other shows, pretty famous TV maker. So he made this, and he has major people show up as guest stars, which was funny because you think they would have promoted it that way. You think they would have said, like, oh, you're going to see some of the main characters from Big Bang Theory show up, including some of the, I would say, richest, don't need to really do this, actors. They will show up, and we will not tell you they're showing up. We won't promote it as they're showing up. They're just going to show up. They're going to have plenty of lines. They obviously spent time on set, not just a quick cameo. And so it's kind of fascinating that they do that. And of course, they could have these characters show up over and over again because every universe, everybody's different. So,
It's so I have not seen any of Stuart Fails to Save the Universe. I took a look at it when it was first announced, and I kind of, what they promoted it as was a sequel to Big Bang, kind of. And when I saw what it was going to be about, I just decided, oh man, that just sounds so stupid
Well, yeah.
I never really got into it. But I don't know, maybe it's worth a second look.
I mean, it's a comedy sci-fi premise, so it's going to be ridiculous. But you get some laughs and you see some characters again, and it's good escapist TV.
Are these half hour episodes?
Half hour. But in the streaming kind of world, they're like wildly different in times of you know how it is. It's not like they're, oh, 22 minutes, 30 seconds every single one. It's like, nah, they went over sometimes, by a bunch or whatever. Obviously, if they had a lot of good material for whatever that story was in editing, they just said, yeah, sure, this will be 5 minutes or 10 minutes longer.
It's funny. I've noticed that actually with a lot of streaming first shows that they've simply given up on broadcast TV parameters, and they will do sometimes, just what's appropriate for whatever content they're showing. Your 1 hour show may one day be 1.5 hours or something like that. But you always know when they are, if they're exactly 22 and a half or 45 minutes long, then you know what their market really was.
Yeah, exactly.
Self-promotion. So there's been a lot of talk about something called ClickFix, which to me is a really bad name for this because it gives really no indication of what the problem truly is. I think you had something on ClickFix not that
Yeah, I
long
did a
ago,
video on
too.
it. Yeah.
So you may have been my inspiration for at least tackling the topic. Anyway, ClickFix, what it is and how to avoid it, askleo.com/195093. It's one of those things where, yeah, it's kind of sneaky. And if you're not aware of the technique, I could see people falling for it. People have obviously people have fallen for
Oh,
it.
yeah.
And it's something simply to be aware of, so that when you encounter it, you know not to.
Right. It seems that when you're talking about phishing attacks and things like that, the more complex it is, the easier it is to get past experienced users, but also the easier it is to patch. You know, if there's like a whole bunch of things that need to fall into place,
Right.
then Microsoft or Apple or whatever can come in and say, well, we're not going to allow this anymore, or we're going to have an extra dialogue. But the simpler they are,
Right.
then there's no protection like that against it. In this case, of course, ClickFix is just very simple. It's like, hey, you put copy and paste this into the terminal and press return, which it seems like ridiculous. But you know, it's like, well, hey, our previous technique got 10 out of a million people. This technique will only get 5 out of a million people, but that's all we
Yeah,
need.
and the poor folks that are faced with it, I mean, oh my God, yes, it's another CAPTCHA, right? It's another way to prove I'm
Yes.
human. And this makes
Yeah.
total sense that this is a way to prove that I'm human. So yeah, fine, I'll do the thing, even though I've
Yeah.
hated doing the different things for so long, I'll do this thing, and all of a sudden, you really wish you hadn't.
Let's say for my self-promotion, I'm going to actually, instead of a Mac Most video, I'm going to point to the video on my walking tour of downtown Denver, part of my travel channel. That is, you know, it's I think I've gotten 6 or 7 videos now since May, and plenty more to come. Whether or not it's any kind of success, I don't know, but it's definitely a hobby at this point.
Yeah, oh, fun stuff. Again, it's playing with technology.
And
And
I got to play with a Insta360 camera.
the
This
actual,
thing.
oh, cool, that one. Yeah, the
Yeah,
360
the
thing.
360 degree spherical view. And most of the video from the downtown Denver walking tour was me basically taking one of these out, doing the walk with it on the end of a selfie stick slung over my shoulder and just recording as I walked along. And it's fascinating as a video production method because you get it's just a whole different way of thinking about video. You don't frame anything in advance, you just film.
Right.
The only thing you worry about is distance to things and movement because that you can't, those are the two things you can't recreate later on.
Right.
So yeah, so you just create interesting movements. It's like, oh, this is a cool spot to film in, but what I should do is walk from this point A to this point B and get the
Right.
spherical, you know, thing. And then you end up with so much material. Like several times while making this video, I was like, oh, I should mention this, but I'd have to go back and film that. Oh, wait, no, I didn't, because I walked by it while I was filming this other thing. I just need to go back. Turned the viewpoint around, and there it is. There's the thing I forgot to film. It was behind me or to my right. And now I can actually extract video from the spherical view that looks like I actually filmed it on purpose.
Fascinating.
Yeah,
Fascinating.
fascinating
Yeah.
stuff.
All
Okay.
righty. Well, I think that pretty much does us for yet another week. As
Yep.
kind of a heads up, looks like September is going to be a very quiet month for us. We've got some things going on, so
That's right.
we
Yep.
will either be here at the very end of September or the beginning of October, depending on how a couple of things shake out. As always, thank you all very much for listening to us rambling here. And we will see you again, well, in a month or so. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
The show notes for this week are at tehpodcast.com/teh275. If you have a comment or question for us, be sure to leave it on the show notes page. The TEH podcast is hosted by Leo Notenboom of Askaleo.com and Gary Rosenzweig of Macmost.com and edited by Connie Delaney. I'm your synthetic announcer, Adam, from 11labs.com.